Hey, this is Tyler Rogers from Charles Bronson Radio on 90.5 WCVH in Flemington. I'm joined here by Thomas Kalnoki and Josh Ansley, singer, guitarist, and then bassist for Streetlight Manifesto. Their debut album was done completely independently and quickly sold out. That's the Bandits of the Acoustic Revolution. Now Streetlight Manifesto's debut album, entitled Everything Goes Numb, is out now on Victory Records. Has been in store since August. Hey, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
Is Charles Bronson dead?
Yeah.
Was it named that before the...
Blasphemy.
No, it was afterwards.
Right.
Big fans.
Like a tribute?
Yeah. Cool. All right, how did you guys start playing music? Were you in the band at school or just started picking up your instruments?
Actually, one of my mother's friends was playing bass, and I was just... He was playing this song, Black Sabbath Paranoid, and it was the coolest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And went in and...
Interview?
Yeah.
Come on. One cool
and he taught me how to play it.
The forum?
Sit down.
No.
That's my best friend.
Oh, really? I can sit down?
This is, what's your name?
Tyler.
No,
Tyler.
The forums.
Oh, Catch-22, Bigwig NJ.
Did you email me?
No, I don't think so.
No. Yes, you did.
Dude, he's trying to...
Maybe
I'm sorry, I'm sorry. I should leave.
No, stay, by all means. So, what's up?
Oh, I'm sorry. Josh was...
That's how I started, yeah. He was playing Black Sabbath Paranoid, and I was like, holy shit, because I loved that song at the time. He taught me how to play it, and that's how I started.
I really don't remember. All I remember is that I used to play piano and I hated it more than anything. It's like one of those like parents enforced things. And then finally I cut a deal with them and they let me pick up a guitar, and that's it. From then I've been playing nonstop pretty much, more or less.
How'd the whole project come together? Was it all done after the Botar record?
Yeah, definitely. The Botar record was recorded like 2.5-3 years ago, and this one was recorded over the course of a few months in the beginning to middle of this year. So they were like really close to each other in proximity.
What made you decide to sign to a record label? Was it strictly for like packaging and distribution purposes?
No, it was mostly the hookers and the crack cocaine. No,
not packaging, but
yeah,
distro.
My packaging. Never mind. the biggest reason was the distribution, because we're at a point in terms of like the digital world and the world of home recording where you can pretty much spend a couple $1,000s, what it would normally cost to record a record. You can use that money to buy all the equipment you need to record a record. Yeah, it sounds professional, and if you're willing to put in time to learn how to use everything, you can do like a professional record in your basement, you know, if you're willing to put in the elbow grease. But obviously Victory could do what we couldn't do in terms of distribution. And selling.
I'm sorry. I'm fucking up this whole interview.
Curse.
Hello.
It's school.
Oh, sorry.
Shit. Sorry.
Hey, I'm in the middle of an interview here. Come on. What? You just not answering? What? All
right. No. So Acoustic Bandits was like kind of like a wake up call in terms of how hard it is to distribute something over the internet yourselves. You know, especially when it came to the packaging and the distribution, you know, we were like swamped with work. So this way, like, you know, we make the music, we take care of all the creative decisions, Victory puts it out there. That's that.
So the whole thing was recorded before you guys got signed?
No. The demo was recorded. We have a four-song demo of four songs that are on the record eventually, like different versions. But don't open that toilet room, dude. Don't. So I told you. We recorded a demo and we sent it to a few labels. Victory like loved it. I was talking to them for a while, and then we got signed. Then we recorded the record, but without Victory's participation in any way. We actually fronted the money for it ourselves, everything, and then Victory reimbursed us for the mixing.
What's the typical recording process like for a song? Do you write the lyrics and guitar, or do you have an idea for what the horn should play, or bass and drums? And like, how's that go?
It's pretty much, in terms of structure, songwriting structure, it's pretty much done. I can say that, right?
Yes.
Yeah, all right, thanks. It's pretty much done when, I put it together, like, on the computer. You know, obviously, I write the songs on acoustic guitar in my bedroom, and then I flesh them out on the computer in terms of setting up song structure, what goes when, what parts go when, and how many times this will repeat or whatever. And I like either hum the horn line either on record, or I hum the horn line to the horn guys, and then everyone comes in and it's kind of like everyone like tweaks everything. I know Josh does his bass lines, the horn guys add harmonies out the ass. Oh, sorry.
Oh,
it's cool, dude.
It's right? Is it okay?
Yeah.
You can like bleep it out or something.
Yeah.
I mean, is this going into like written form or is this?
No, this is on the radio.
For my radio show.
Oh, shite! Yeah. That's what he said.
Shut up!
Can't say shite.
No, he's broadcasting in Scotland.
Oh
hey, hey!
No, I'm just kidding. I was like, what? All
right. So yeah, and then you know, everyone kind of puts their magic in. Everyone puts their magic in on it, and then, you know, and then it's pretty much more or less done.
With the state of the music industry as it is today, Hillary Duff becoming the number one record, for example, how important is it for you to be writing, playing, and producing your own music?
I mean, it's not going to cause any kind of revolutions or anything, because there's always going to be that, like, Hillary Duff, Britney Spears type character who's, like, picked up by a group of image makers, and they, like, control everything about her. And there's always going to be that, and there's always going to be a market for it. There's always going to be 12-year-old girls who want that, 12-year-old boys, too, whatever. And, you know, and there's always going to be bands like us who take it into our own hands, you know what I mean? So, I mean, it's not that big a change. The only change is that now the technology is more accessible, you know, to, like, Joe Schmo. And obviously that's also going to have a counter effect in terms of, like, there's going to be hundreds of really bad bands putting out records, but obviously they're going to sink. But then, like, you know, the ones that know what they're doing can do it on their own without the participation or without the input of, you know, higher ups or non-creative types.
Yeah, I think also it's like with the beauty of the internet. I mean, as long, if your stuff's good, it's going to get out there and get heard by people. And, you know, you can produce it yourself, and then you don't necessarily. I mean, it's one thing for Victory to have, you know, international distribution, but it can really spread like wildfire, like one cool guy did, you know, over the internet.
A lot of the work, aside from just the music, seems like it's all done by the band. For example, the website and the various logos, are those designs all drawn by yourselves?
That's done by Tom, not the band.
You will address me as His Highness, Thomas. No, yeah, I'm a graphic design student in college, and I have been for many, 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 many years. And so I take care of like the graphic aspect. That's like, that was like one of my dreams, you know, to like take care of the like the art of a band. So luckily I'm in a band.
There seems to be a recurring theme of the photography, whether it be in the CD booklet to Keys Be Nice or For Everything Goes Numb. Is photography a huge hobby?
Yeah, actually, yeah. I used to have a dark room in my basement, which has been torn down since. But yeah, I've always been into pretty much anything graphic, any like photography, computer art, painting, porno, everything. You know, I've always been in, like, that's been like the mainstay of my life, probably even more than music. You know, like that's my thing. I consider myself a visual artist first.
You guys just played your first show ever last week at Rutgers as a band, and are playing tonight here at the Stone Pony, and one more time tomorrow night at the Continental in New York City. How's it felt to be away from playing live music for so long and then return to that atmosphere?
I think all of us can answer that, like, yeah. One by one.
Chris, you want to start? That's Chris Thatcher talking
to
the microphone.
Cursing,
what's up,
man?
Dude?
I'm sorry. I don't know. It was weird. It was. I haven't played in like 5 or 6 years in front of a crowd like that. Actually, I've never played in front of a crowd like that. That was pretty intense. I don't know, it was just weird. It was fun. I was really excited. Not as much nervous, I don't think, as excited. But yeah. Yeah.
Well, he wasn't nervous, but I think the rest of us were more than made up.
So you weren't nervous?
Not really.
No, he was calm.
I was pretty calm. I just wanted to play. I was excited. I've never played in front of, you know, a group of people that went nuts like that. So it was cool. It was fun. What was the question again?
I'll go. Yeah, it was amazing to be back. I haven't even really touched my bass since I quit Catch 22. I mean, I haven't been playing for like a really long time. And as an actor, I've been on stage since then, but I forgot how amazing it really feels to be playing music on stage. And I was nervous as hell, and my hemorrhoid was flaring. So
I had to bring that up.
But it was amazing, and it's amazing to be back after, like, you know, 5 years of not playing, and to just walk back into so welcoming an experience was pretty incredible.
I've always had like serious issues with like playing in front of people. I'm like more of like a introverted type person, and I'd be lying if I said I wasn't scared, like absolutely shitless. And I was so nervous. I mean, there were
shit.
What's fuck.
<It's> sorry.
I'm sorry, dude. You got a lot of editing to do. But yeah, I was petrified, but I mean, after we started that first song, and, you know, like, we were expecting like 30, 40 kids, you know, we didn't know what to expect, and somehow, you know, like, place like was packed, and like everyone knew the words, and like, it was just completely comforting to know that I didn't have to know the words because everyone else did. So I did blank on numerous occasions. But yeah, it was nerve-wracking, but it was also like a blessing. It was, I know a lot of people have said this since then about the show, but like, I can still say with all sincerity that it was like somehow spiritual. It was like insane, and I honestly don't think I'm sure we'll play better in the future. We didn't play that great that night, but there was just something about that night that's gonna go down in I think all of our hearts, like for life. Just wacky.
When you hear about kids coming from like when you hear about kids coming from like Minnesota or Canada, I mean, to come see a show in New Jersey, what is that like? Like, what kind of feeling do you get when you hear about that?
It's ultimate flattery, but it's also ultimate pleasure. You know, like our big. I'm sorry, were you gonna say that?
No.
Alright.
I thought when you said but, I thought you were gonna be like, it's ultimate flattery, but
stay home, losers.
I was like, what? What are you saying?
Can't you find another band near you? No, I mean, you know, we didn't know which way the pancake was gonna flop.
Ow.
I just made that up. That made no sense.
That was good.
Thanks. We didn't know, I mean, because we never played before. We were thinking we were gonna just like book a Thursday night at a local bar under a fake name and get our, you know, get the live show. Yeah, I'll just read my rent. No, but so we were kind of like it's nerve wracking in a way because you know that these people are traveling and they're working hard to get to your show, so you gotta deliver the good. It's not like you know just another weekend show for a local band with like local kids, you know, driving 10 minutes to see the band or whatever. It's like kids investing time and money to come see your band, so you gotta kick ass. And you know, like I said, with the performance, I don't think we kicked ass. We had a few issues in terms of, you know, teething and
yeah, but this is the one they're traveling for.
Oh, okay, then yeah, we were amazing last time. Too bad you guys didn't see it. And we're gonna be amazing this time too.
I think it's cool that they are. I mean, I think it's amazing that they find such love for the music that they're doing that. But I think it's also cool that we are inspiring somebody to take trips like that because those are so freaking fun. And I think it's so cool that like they have a reason and they're doing it, you know. And we'll see them tonight, I guess.
Any future touring plans?
Yeah, we're hitting Japan in February. No, actually, that's
a bunch of kids right now going,
that's horrible.
Shit.
Sorry.
You said shit.
Sorry.
Oh! You said it too.
Alright, it's all up in the air. I gotta finish school, so we're gonna be doing like strips of shows when I come up. I don't know, but you know, we're all kind of like really busy, but we will find time to do. I'd like to do some touring. I think everyone's.
Yeah, it is all up in the air, and we're taking it like day by day. Oh, like, but I mean, we want to. It's like everybody's got different things going on, and you know, hopefully, we're gonna do some like, you know, like weekend kind of stuff. You know, to different cities as far as we can get, and then hopefully by the summer maybe.
We'll
branch out, but I don't know. Nothing's set even remotely close, so. We don't even know what's going on after tomorrow, so.
All right, I'm going to delve into a top secret kind of question. What's next for Streetlight Manifesto /Botar/ The Risk Group? Like a music video, Botar full length, anything involving a treadmill?
The treadmill. Yeah, the treadmill is being prepped.
Oh, because you're selling it or buying it?
Oh. Yeah. Oh, yeah. The treadmill is being prepped for its use, and that's going to be revealed shortly. Well, not so shortly, as you know us. But I'm not
tomorrow.
Presently disclosed to identify
and other
relative decipher impertinent information about that subject at this juncture. No, I can't really talk about it because Josh
can't.
I won't. No, you know, I'm into the whole surprise thing, so yeah, there's a lot of stuff in the works.
All right. One last question. Do you have some kind of black book of musicians' phone numbers or some kind of vat of talent in your house? Like, what's going on with all these musicians?
No, actually, I mean, everyone I called for Botar and then Streetlight was pretty much, we're all friends from, like, the New Jersey scene or whatever back in the day. You know, like, yeah, come on in. Don't freeze. Just don't curse. We've been, like, cursing up a storm here. So for Acoustic Bandits, it was mostly One Cool Guy Guys. That sounds mean. They're body parts. No, but and then, you know, Streetlight was most of my Catcher and Two buddies. Chris here is from Groundswell, a band we used to play with back in the day. And yeah,
I think it's just people, you know, you're playing out and you're playing around. It's like, and you meet people, you know, it's like as musicians, like we're friends with a lot of musicians and stuff like that. So, you know, you wind up just, you know, it's piecemeal. Like, you know, Dan Ross from the Royalties. I mean, we know him. We know he's a great player. Tom knew him. Tom knew he was a great player, and Tom called him, you know, and that's just kind of how it works.
Once again, Streetlight Manifesto's debut album, Everything Goes Numb, is out now on Victory Records at a record store near you. Thanks again to Thomas, Josh, and Chris.
Thank you very much.
You, man.